as if her limbs had lost their bones.
"That took more out of me than I expected," she said softly. "Can you carry me up to the bedroom?"
"I'm sorry," Legend said. But he didn't sound sorry at all. His voice was cruel without the sensuousness to temper it. Then he spoke words too quietly for Tella to hear. The witch lost even more color, her already pale skin turning parchment white.
"You're joking."
"Have you ever known me to have a sense of humor?" he asked. Then he picked up the witch and slung her over his shoulder with the ease of a young man checking an item off a list. Tella stumbled backward on half-numb limbs, leaving a small riot of ripped-up feathers in her wake. She knew that he'd meant it every time he'd told her that he wasn't the hero, but a part of her kept hoping that he'd prove her wrong. Tella wanted to believe that Legend really cared about her, and that she was his exception. Although she couldn't help but fear that all that belief really meant was that Legend was actually her exception, that her desire for him was the weakness that could destroy her if she didn't conquer it, if Legend was willing to betray the woman who'd created him, then he was willing to betray anyone. Tella tore through the roses, running from her hiding spot beneath the window back into the forest. She stumbled off the main path into the trees, only glancing back once she was safely hidden behind a copse of pines. Legend left the cottage with Esmeralda still slung over his shoulder. And in that moment, Legend no longer felt like Tella's enemy, or her friend, or the boy she used to love. Legend felt like every story she'd never wanted to believe about him. Chapter 7. Scarlet. Scarlet's feelings were a commotion of colors, swirling around her in garlands of excited aquamarine, nervous marigold, and frustrated ginger snap. She'd been pacing the suite since her sister had left, somehow knowing that Tella wouldn't be back in time, but also hoping that she'd prove Scarlet wrong. She stopped pacing and looked herself over in the mirror once more to make sure her dress wasn't a reflection of how anxious she felt. The gown's pale pink lace appeared duller than before, but everything appeared dimmer in this mirror. The sweet Scarlet and Tella rented was a threadbare tapestry of aging items. Both girls had agreed on moving out of the palace. Scarlet had wanted to be independent. Tella claimed the same thing. But Scarlet imagined her younger sister had also wanted to create distance from Legend after how he'd walked away from her at the end of Caraval. Tella had begged to rent one of the fashionable apartments in the fanciful Satine district, but Scarlet knew that their money had to last beyond one season. As a compromise, they'd leased a suite of small rooms on the farthest edge of the Satine district, where the trim on the mirrors was more yellow than gold. The chairs were upholstered with scratchy velveteen, and everything smelled chalky, like chipped porcelain. Tella complained about it regularly, but living somewhere modest allowed them to stretch their funds. With most of the money Tella had stolen from their father, they'd secured this apartment until the end of the year. Scarlet wasn't sure what they'd do after that, but it wasn't her most pressing concern. The clock chimed 3. She peered out her window. There were still no signs of Tella among the holiday revelers, but Scarlet's ground coach had finally arrived. There weren't many in Valenda, as people favored floating carriages to ones that rolled through the street. But her former fiancé, Count Nicholas Darcy, or Nicholas, as she had started calling him, resided in a country estate outside the city's quarters, far beyond any of the floating carriage houses. Knowing this, Scarlet had secured her transport a week ago. What she hadn't known was how crowded the festival would be. People were already hollering at her coachman to move. He wouldn't wait long. If he left, Scarlet would be stranded, and she'd miss her chance to finally meet Nicholas. Her lips pinched together as she entered the bedroom where Paloma slept. Always sleeping. Always, always sleeping. Scarlet tried not to be bitter. Knowing her mother hadn't meant to abandon them forever, that she'd been trapped in a cursed deck of destiny for the past 7 years, made Scarlet more sympathetic to her. But she still couldn't forgive her mother for leaving her and Tella with their wretched father in the first place. She could never see Paloma the same way Tella did. In fact, Tella would probably be furious when she returned and found Paloma unattended. She was always saying how she didn't want their mother to wake up and be alone. But Scarlet doubted Paloma would wake today. And if Tella was so concerned, she should have come back in time. Scarlet pulled open the main door to her suite, ready to call for a servant and ask her to keep an eye on their mother. But one of the maids was already there, coral-cheeked and smiling broadly.
"Afternoon, miss." The servant did a quick half-curtsy. "I came to tell you there's a gentleman waiting for you in the first-floor parlor."
Scarlet looked past the servant's shoulders. She could see the scratched wood banister, but there was no view of anything downstairs.
Did the gentleman give a name? "He said he wanted to surprise you. He's very handsome."
The girl coyly twirled a lock of hair around her finger, as if this attractive young man was standing in front of them. Scarlet hesitated, considering her options. Perhaps it was Nicholas, come to surprise her. But that didn't sound like him. He was so proper. He hadn't wanted to meet her while the days of mourning were being observed. He'd asked her to wait until today for their true courtship to begin. There was one other person who it might be, but Scarlet didn't want to hope it was him, especially not today. She'd vowed not to think about him today. And if it was Julian, he was 5 weeks late. Scarlet might have thought he'd died, except she'd had Tella ask Legend about it, and he'd confirmed Julian was still alive. Though he didn't say where his brother was, or why he'd failed to contact Scarlet.
"Would you do me a favor?" Scarlet said to the servant. "My mother is still unwell. She doesn't need anything, but I hate to leave her alone. While I'm out, would you check on her every half hour in case she wakes?"
Scarlet handed the girl a coin. Then she quietly crept down the stairs, heart in her throat, hoping, despite her better judgment, that Julian had finally returned and had missed her as much as she missed him. She kept her steps quiet, but the moment she entered the parlor, she forgot how to move. Julian's eyes met hers from across the room. Everything was suddenly warmer than it had been before. The parlor walls grew smaller and hotter, as if too much sunlight had snuck in through the windows, covering all the tattered bookshelves and chairs in the sort of hazy afternoon light that left the entire world out of focus, except for him. He looked perfect. Scarlet could have easily been convinced he'd just escaped from a fresh painting. The tips of his dark hair were wet, his amber eyes were shining, and his lips parted in a devastating smile. This was the boy of Scarlet's dreams. Of course, Julian probably starred in the dreams of half the girls on the continent as well. All of her earlier feelings from before transformed into flames of fiery tangerine. Julian couldn't see her colors, but Scarlet didn't want to reveal her feelings with other tells. She didn't want her knees growing weak or her cheeks turning to blush. And yet, she couldn't stop her heart from racing at the sight of him, as if she were preparing to chase him should he run away, which he had. He must have been somewhere even warmer than here. His unusually crisp shirt sleeves were neatly rolled up, showing off lean arms. One forearm had a wide white bandage on it that contrasted with his skin,
which was several shades darker than his natural golden brown, tanned from wherever legend had sent him last. The neatly trimmed stubble lining his jaw was thicker and longer than she remembered as well, and covered part of the thin scar that ran from his eye to his jaw. He didn't wear a coat, but he had on a gray vest with shiny silver buttons that matched the lines of fancy thread on the sides of his deep blue trousers, which were tucked into brand new leather boots. When she'd first met Julian, he'd looked like a scoundrel, but now he was pure gentleman. "Hello, Crimson." Her dress reacted immediately. Scarlet willed it not to shift and betray any of her feelings, but the gown had always liked Julian. The first time she'd put on the dress back on Legend's Isle, she'd been embarrassed to undress in front of Julian, and a little disappointed because the dress had looked like a dreary rag. Then she'd put it on, and when she turned and looked at Julian, the gown had transformed into a confection of lace and seductive colors, as if it had somehow known that this was the boy whose heart she needed to win. Scarlet couldn't see her reflection now, but she could feel the gown shifting. Warm air brushed her décolletage as the dress's neckline lowered. The skirt tightened to hug the curve of her hips, and the fabric's color deepened to the ravenous pink of lips longing to be kissed. Julian's grin turned wolfish, reminding her of the night he'd first whisked her off her home Isle of Trista. But despite the hungry look in his eyes, he made no move to close the space between them. His elbow rested against a cracked display case as a fresh ray of sunlight streamed through the window, gilding all his edges in gold and making him look even more untouchable. Scarlet wanted to run to him and throw her arms around him, but she didn't move from the doorway. "When did you return?" she asked coolly.
"A week ago."
"And you're only visiting now?" Scarlet wanted to ask, but she reminded herself that she was the one who'd first put a wedge between them when she'd told him she wanted to meet her former fiancé. Julian had said he understood, had said he wanted her to do whatever she needed. But then he'd been sent away on another errand from Legend.
"I won't be able to write, but it will only take 1 week," he'd promised.
1 week had turned into 2, then 3, then 4, then 5 weeks without so much as a note from him to say he was still alive. She wasn't sure if it was because he'd given up on her, or if he'd forgotten about her because he was so busy working for Legend. Julian pulled at the back of his neck, looking uncomfortable, bringing Scarlet's attention back to the bandage wrapped around his arm. "Were you wounded? Was that why he hadn't come by? What happened to your arm?"
"It's nothing," he mumbled.
But Scarlet would have sworn he blushed. She didn't even know Julian was capable of blushing. He had no shame. He moved through the world with utter confidence. But his cheeks were definitely flushed, and his eyes refused to meet hers.
"I'm sorry I didn't come by sooner."
"It's all right," Scarlet said. "I'm sure you're very busy with whatever Legend has you doing." Her gaze flickered once more to the mysterious bandage around his arm, and then up to his eyes, which still declined to meet hers. "It's nice of you to stop by. It's good to see you." She itched to say so much more, but she could hear the carriage horses neighing outside. Scarlet needed to leave before she mucked things up with Nicholas.
"I'd love to chat, but unfortunately, I was about to step out."
Julian shoved away from the display cabinet.
"If you're going to enjoy the festival, I'll join you."
It was the polite statement of a friend, but Scarlet's feelings for Julian had always been too strong for friendship, even when she'd first met him and hadn't liked him at all.
Scarlet and Julian could never just be friends. She needed more from him, or she needed him to let her go.
I'm not going to the festival, Scarlet said. I'm finally going to meet Nicholas.
Julian's expression fell. It only lasted a moment. If Scarlet had torn her eyes from him for a second, she would have missed it. Almost as soon as he heard what she said, Julian walked past her to the boarding house front door. She expected him to leave, to let her go and close the door on them completely. Instead, he opened it with an oddly pleasant smile.
That's perfect, he said,
cheerful, as if she'd just told him they were having coconut cake for dinner.
I can be your chaperone.
I don't need a chaperone.
Do you already have one?
Scarlet glared.
You and I never had one.
Exactly.
With a smug grin, he swaggered past her to the idling carriage and opened that door as well. But rather than wait for her to enter, Julian slipped into the coach. Scarlet's emotions were searing as she entered the coach and took the seat across from him. Julian might have started dressing like a gentleman, but he was still behaving like a scoundrel. She'd have understood his frustrating behavior if he'd made any effort to contact her over the past 5 weeks, or if he'd tried to fight for her after she'd told him that she wanted to give Nicholas another chance as well. But it seemed all Julian wanted to do was fight against her.
You're trying to sabotage this, she accused.
I'd say I'd never do that. But that would be a lie.
Julian lounged back in his seat, spreading out the way young men always seem to. Since the streets of Valenda weren't made for coaches, this box was particularly narrow, with barely enough room for the two of them. But Julian stretched his arms across the brocade cushions and kicked out his legs to take up more than half the space. Scarlet grabbed one of his knees, knocked it into the other, and pointed toward the door as the carriage began to rumble down the road.
Get out, Julian.
No.
His arms dropped from the cushion and he leaned forward.
I'm not leaving, Crimson. We've spent enough time apart.
He placed his hand on top of hers and pressed it firmly to his knee. Scarlet tried to pull away, but it was in the half-hearted way someone did something when they were actually hoping someone would stop them. And Julian did. He slipped his brown fingers between hers and held on tighter than he ever had, as if making up for all the weeks he hadn't been able to touch her.
While I was gone, I tried to remember every word you ever said to me. I've thought about you every hour of every day I was away.
Scarlet fought the urge to smile. It was everything she had wanted to hear. But Julian had always excelled at knowing what to say. It was following through where he fell apart.
Then why didn't you write?
You told me you wanted space to meet your count.
I didn't want that much space. For 5 weeks, I heard nothing from you. I thought that you'd forgotten about me or moved on.
She tried not to sound too accusing or too desperate. She felt as if she'd failed at both, and yet Julian's earnest expression didn't waver. His eyes were the prettiest shade of brown, and warmer than the light slipping through the carriage windows.
I won't ever move on, Crimson.
He took her hand and brought it to his heart. Scarlet's heart beat wild and uneven in response, but Julian's remained steady and unwavering beneath her palm.
I've made a lot of mistakes. I gave you space because I thought that's what you needed. But I realized as soon as I saw you today that I was wrong. So I'm in this carriage with you now, ready to go wherever you're going, even if it means watching you with another man.
Scarlet crashed back to reality. For a moment, she'd forgotten about Nicholas.
What if I don't want you to watch me with another man? She said.
I'm not thrilled about the idea either.
Julian's tone turned teasing, but his fingers tensed as the carriage rattled over a bumpy road. They were nearing the edge of the city and drawing closer to Nicholas's estate.
If you really want me to leave, I'll get out of this coach and walk back to the palace, Julian said. But you should know that I'm also here because I don't trust this count.
Do you trust me? Scarlet said.
With my life. But I've met your father, and I have a difficult time putting faith in anyone who would make a deal with him.
Nicholas isn't like that. When Scarlet had first written Nicholas after learning she'd not truly met him during Caraval, he had been away from the continent mourning her. Her father had lied and said Scarlet and her sister had both died in an accident. He had no idea what a horrible man Marcello Dragna was. And Nicholas was nothing like her father. He was drawings of plants and anecdotes about his dog Timber. He was a rule follower like her. He believed in tradition so much he'd waited until today to meet her. Nicholas was safe. Scarlet couldn't see him breaking her heart. Julian had already broken her heart twice, and even if Julian didn't intentionally do it again, her heart would break for him eventually. When Scarlet had first written Nicholas, she'd only wanted to meet him, to cure her curiosity. Then Julian had left for so long, and Nicholas's letters had been there when Julian hadn't. Steady when Julian had been unreliable. As a part of Caraval, Julian was ageless. He could die and stay dead if someone killed him when a game wasn't in play. But he would never grow old as long as he was one of Legend's performers. Scarlet could never ask him to give that up. She didn't know if Legend would still hold the games now that he was to become emperor. But given how Julian had just disappeared for weeks, it was clear Legend still controlled him. Any future Scarlet and Julian might have together was destined not to last. And yet, even knowing all of this, she couldn't bring herself to pull her hand away from his. "I don't want you to walk back to the palace," she said. "But if you ruin this, I swear on the stars I will never speak to you again. The Count has to believe you're a chaperone. We can tell him that you're my cousin."
"That's not going to work unless you're fine with him believing you have an inappropriate relationship with your cousin."
Julian darted closer and pressed a quick kiss to her neck. Scarlet felt her cheeks go red.
"Don't you dare do anything like that."
He lounged back, laughing hard enough to shake the carriage.
"I was only kidding, Crimson, although now I'm tempted to follow through."
Chapter 8 Scarlet. Sweat beaded between Scarlet's toes as a servant led her down a hall covered in detailed wainscoting and thick crown molding. There might have been some cracks in the molding, which gave her a hint of pause. Nicholas had never said it, but at one point, she'd imagined that he'd only wanted to marry her because of her father's wealth. But she wasn't connected to her father anymore. If Nicholas ever chose to propose, it would be because of her. Now the palms of her hands were sweating even more than her toes. She wanted to wipe the damp on her gown, but it would be worse to have obvious streaks marring the deep pink fabric. Scarlet took several shallow breaths, trying to calm herself as the servant opened the door to a sprawling garden covered in glass.
"His lordship will meet you in here."
Sprightly hummingbirds zipped from plant to plant, mirroring the state of Scarlet's chaotic stomach as she stepped through the doorway. Everything smelled of pollen and flowers and budding romance. Nicholas had recently drawn her a bouquet of hybrid flowers and told her that he enjoyed experimenting in the garden. She'd thought he'd written it to sound impressive, but clearly someone played with the plants in here. There were clusters of white Velenden phasies with velvet blue vines, silver spider lilies that shined under the light, and yellow stems of sunflowers with jade green petals. Not too far from the door rested a copper table set with a bouquet of bright pink peonies, a pitcher of minted lemonade, sandwiches of seeded bread, and tiny tarts covered in white plums. Enough to be thoughtful without going over the top. Julian eyed the little feast suspiciously, as if the lemonade was poisonous and the sandwiches hid razor blades.
It's not too late to leave.
I'm exactly where I want to be. Scarlet perched on the edge of a large copper chair.
But you're free to go whenever you wish.
Don't tell me you really like it here.
Julian's eyes lifted toward a slice of the glass ceiling covered in ladybugs.
There's something off. Even the insects want to escape.
Ahem, someone cleared his throat. His lordship, Count Nicholas Darcy.
Scarlet's breath caught. Clipped footsteps, heavier than she would have expected, followed the servant's voice. She thought she'd imagined her former fiancé as every possible sort of man. She'd pictured him short, tall, slender, wide, old, young, bald, hairy, handsome, plain, pale, dark, brooding, cheerful. She'd pictured him dressed in frilly frock coats and dour suits as she tried to imagine the first thing he'd say upon meeting her. She'd imagined what she'd say to him as well, but her words tangled together as he stepped forward and took her hand in his. Nicholas was a mountain. The large hand holding Scarlet's could have just as easily crushed it as cradled it. He was almost a full foot taller than her, all muscled legs, burly arms, and brown hair so thick that even though it appeared he'd tried to tame it, a wide lock fell over his forehead, giving him a boyish appearance, which was added to by his slightly crooked spectacles. He looked the way she would have imagined a vigilante who had a secret identity as a gentleman botanist. Beside him, trailed a great black dog the size of a small pony. Timber. Scarlet had heard a lot about him in Nicholas's letters. His tail wagged and his ears went back at the sight of Scarlet, obviously excited. But the dog didn't leave his master's side. He sat obediently as Nicholas brought her hand to his full mouth. Her dress clearly liked him. Her low neckline was now rimmed with roughly cut gems that sent sparks of light all over the glassed-in garden.
It's wonderful to finally meet you, Scarlet managed.
He smiled, wide and sincere.
I'm tempted to say you're even prettier than I imagined, but I would hate you to think me unoriginal.
Too late, Julian coughed.
A wrinkle formed between Nicholas's thick brows as he noticed Scarlet's companion.
And you are?
Julian,
he offered his hand. But Nicholas refused to let go of Scarlet's.
I wasn't aware Scarlet had a brother.
I'm not her brother.
Julian kept his tone friendly, but Scarlet felt a surge of bruising purple panic as devilry sparked in Julian's eyes.
I'm not related to her at all. I'm an actor she played with during Caraval.
He emphasized the words played with, and Scarlet could have choked him. Julian would choose now to finally be honest. Not that Nicholas appeared disturbed. The young count's broad smile remained even as he pet Timber with his free hand. But Julian wasn't finished.
I'm not surprised she's never mentioned me. At the start of Caraval, I don't think she liked me much. But then we were given the same bedroom.
Julian, enough! Scarlet cut in. Nicholas's smile finally fell. He released her fingers, as if taking them had been a mistake.
It's not the way it sounds. Julian and I are only friends, she said, deciding not to even touch the word bedroom.
He met my father during Caraval, and he was nervous you might be like him. He wanted to come today because he's protective of me. But allowing that was evidently a mistake. She shot a narrow look in Julian's direction. He appeared unapologetic, shrugging as he sank his hands into his pockets.
Nicholas, please.
It's all right, Scarlet.
The Count's voice rumbled deeper than before, but the angry lines around his mouth were gone.
I won't say I'm pleased about this, but after learning the truth about your father and hearing about the fiancé you met during Caraval, I can understand.
Nicholas turned back to Julian, and Scarlet stared as the young men finally shook hands.
Thank you for watching out for her during the game.
I'll always watch out for her, Julian said.
What about when you're not needed?
Nicholas asked. Julian threw his shoulders back and stood taller.
I let Scarlet make that choice.
Julian, stop, Scarlet said.
It's all right, Nicholas scratched his dog behind the ears. I don't mind a bit of competition. In fact, I'd prefer to know who else is trying to win your hand.
I wouldn't put it like that, Julian said. Winning implies this is a game.
It's a figure of speech, said Nicholas.
I know,
Julian smirked.
Games are what I do.
But I don't think you were using it figuratively. You want to win her by proving you're the best.
Isn't that what you want?
Nicholas asked, and Scarlet would have sworn he puffed his chest. They were like battling peacocks. Scarlet pictured their emotions swirling in proud shades of teal and cobalt blue. Or maybe she was actually seeing their feelings? Scarlet always saw her own emotions in colors, but she'd only seen the feelings of someone else once. It had happened during Caraval, after she'd shared blood with Julian. It was the most intimate thing she'd ever done, and afterward, she'd been able to glimpse Julian's feelings. But it hadn't lasted long, and neither did this glimpse of pride, making her wonder if it was only in her mind, since she hadn't drunk anyone's blood. Julian and Nicholas were still staring each other down. This was not the scene Scarlet had imagined. She was supposed to be the one Nicholas was staring at. He was supposed to flatter and woo her, not argue with Julian.
I don't need to prove anything, said Julian. I'm not trying to win her hand. I'm offering her mine and everything that comes with it, hoping she'll take it and decide she wants to keep it.
It was one of the sweeter things Julian had said, and maybe Scarlet would have accepted his hand if he actually had spared her a look during his pretty speech. But the boys were so caught up in their sparring, it seemed they'd forgotten she was there.
I'm glad this isn't just a game to you, Julian, but maybe it should be.
Perhaps we should turn this into a courtship competition, Scarlet said. The words immediately tasted like a mistake, but the bemused glances of her gentlemen felt like a victory. Instead of speaking as if Scarlet wasn't there, Julian and Nicholas were now looking at her as if she were the only one present.
They did this in the early days of the Meridian Empire, she went on. Young ladies from wealthier noble families would arrange a series of tasks so that their gentlemen suitors could show off their skills. Whoever completed them first or best would then marry the young lady.
Nicholas ran a hand over his mouth as if trying to hide his expression, but she could tell he was intrigued.
This shouldn't be a game, Julian said.
Afraid you'll lose?
Nicholas definitely puffed his chest this time. Julian muttered something under his breath. His posture was tense and his jaw was clenched, making the scar that ran from his jaw to his eye turn into an aggravated white line.
Crimson, don't make this a game.
If he hadn't said that, Scarlet might have changed her mind. She'd made the challenge mostly to shock them and to stop their ridiculous fighting. But if she backed out now, it would look as if she were doing it for Julian and not for herself. And she always felt as if she were caving in for Julian. Julian was the sun in the middle of the wettest part of the cold season, gloriously warm and wonderful when he was there, but completely unreliable. For 5 weeks, he'd vanished. Now, though he'd only been back in her life just a few hours, he'd turned it into chaos. Sometimes, admittedly, she liked the wildness he brought into her world, but she didn't like that this time it was more about him getting his way than it was about her. He'd said in the carriage he was here because he didn't trust the Count. But Nicholas was a botanist with a dog. One look at him, and it was clear he didn't have any nefarious plans for Scarlet. Julian just didn't want anyone else to have plans for Scarlet at all. "If you don't want to play, you don't have to," Scarlet said. "But I think it will be fun. My mind is made up."
"Since when do you make up your mind so fast?" argued Julian.
"Since 5 weeks ago." Her smile was an exclamation point. Julian looked as if he wanted to keep arguing. He probably would have if Nicholas wasn't there. Instead, he just swatted at an unfortunate ladybug with more force than necessary. Nicholas's grin expanded as if he was already winning. It made Scarlet a little nervous. But after what she'd just said to Julian, she couldn't back out now. And though it might have been a little terrifying, it was also exhilarating to take control in a way she never had before. "I'll start with a simple challenge, and each challenge will grow progressively harder until one of you backs out, or one of you fails to complete a task."
"What's the first challenge?" Nicholas asked.
Scarlet tried to remember what she'd read in the history books, but this was her game. She could do it however she wanted. "Each of you must bring me a gift within the next 3 days, but it must be something you've never given to anyone else."
"Will we get a prize if we bring the best gift?" Julian asked.
"Yes," Scarlet said. "I'll give a kiss to the winner of each individual challenge, and at the end of the game, I'll marry whoever wins." It was the sort of thing Tella would have said. It was bold, and it made Scarlet feel bold as well. But feelings never lasted, and the results of this game would.
Chapter 9. Scarlet. Scarlet tried not to regret her choice in declaring her hand in marriage a game. While Julian appeared to be hiding how unhappy he was with the way their visit to St. Nicholas's estate had turned out. After Scarlet had laid out the rules of the game, she'd convinced both gentlemen to sit down and have some of the tea and treats Nicholas had prepared. But of course it had turned into another competition. Talk of traveling turned into a battle over who traveled the most. Talk of books had turned into a contest to see who was better read. And when the talk had stopped, they'd stared each other down until Scarlet finally declared it time to leave. Julian now leaned his dark head against the window, one booted foot slung casually over his knee as he hummed softly. Scarlet knew he didn't feel as careless as he appeared, but his melody was resonant and relaxing, making all the flourishing rows of country farms look even prettier as their coach lumbered over uneven roads.
"Do you also sing?" Scarlet asked. "I've never heard a hum so musical."
The corner of Julian's mouth hitched into a wry smile.
"I have lots of practice. For years, legend kept giving me roles as a minstrel who only spoke in song."
Scarlet laughed. "What did you do to earn that?"
Julian shrugged. "My brother has a jealous streak. I think it bothered him that I was getting so much attention during the games. He tried to turn me into a joke. But everyone likes a handsome young man with a good voice."
Scarlet rolled her eyes, but the world did turn lovelier when Julian started humming again.
She looked out the window as the coach rumbled closer to an immaculately kept country house the color of Sun Festival peaches, trimmed in crisp white and surrounded by rambling phasies that made her think of living lace. Even the family out front appeared to be perfectly posed. They must have been celebrating the festival with an outdoor dinner. There was a long table atop the grass, set with flowered cloths and covered in what looked like a feast. The family of five stood around it, all drinking from earthenware goblets, as if someone had just given a toast. Scarlet looked to the youngest child, a girl with long braids down her back. She held her goblet with both hands, lips smiling as if this was her first taste of wine. It was the sort of grin that hurt if a person held on to it too long. But the smile didn't change. Nothing changed. Bitter orange pinpricks of unease crawled over Scarlet's skin as the coach trundled past, and no one among the party lowered their goblets or moved at all. Scarlet might have thought the family was a series of incredibly lifelike statues if not for the terrified plumes of phantom purple swirling around their frozen forms. Plumes that were definitely not in Scarlet's mind. She could see their feelings so vividly, her heart started racing with whatever fright they were experiencing. "Something's wrong." Scarlet reached across the carriage and opened the window to yell at the driver. "Stop the coach!" "What's the matter?" Julian asked. "I don't know, but something isn't right." She flung open the door as soon as the carriage came to a stop. Julian followed while she tore across the grass. The scene looked even more unnatural up close. The only things that moved were the blades of grass around Scarlet's feet and the ants. The ants crawled over the Sun Festival feast while the family remained frozen in their endless toast, mouths awkwardly parted and teeth stained with dark purple from whatever they'd been drinking. "Would Legend do something like this?" Scarlet asked.
"No, he can be cruel, but he's never this cruel."
Julian frowned as he checked the pulse of the youngest girl.
"She's still alive."
He continued to search for heartbeats as the family remained eerily still. "How could someone even do this?" Scarlet scanned the table, as if she might find a bottle of poison hidden among the food. But everything looked perfectly normal. Flatbread, long beans, speckled cobs of corn, baskets of fresh sunberries, latticed pig pies, and... She paused on the butter knives sticking out from the table. Dull, flat metal, the kind of utensils that cut poorly, and yet someone had been strong enough to shove the tip of each one through the cloth into the table, pinning a note in place.
"Julian, come look at this."
Scarlet carefully leaned over the feast, not daring to touch the knives or the note as she read aloud. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If the sun hasn't set, they should all still be alive. But once this day comes to an end, I'm afraid this family will all be dead. If you wish to stop them from turning to stone, whoever reads this must atone. Recall your lies and acts done out of fear. Then confess your latest misdeed out loud for all to hear. Poison.
It doesn't even rhyme properly, Julian grumbled.
I think you're missing the point, Scarlet whispered. She didn't know if the statues were capable of hearing, but if they were, she didn't want to scare them with what she was thinking.
Did you see the name at the bottom of the note? There's a fate called the Poisoner.
It wasn't exactly the same name as Poison, so maybe this wasn't the work of a fate. But if it was, it was a terrible sign. Until recently, Scarlet had never thought much of the fates. The mythical ancient beings had always been her sister's obsessions. But after the fates had been freed from their cursed deck of destiny,
Scarlet had peppered Tella with questions and studied up on them herself. The Fates were so ancient that most people believed them to be myths that only existed as painted images on decks of destiny, which people used to tell fortunes. But they weren't merely painted images. They were real, and had been cursed to live inside a deck of destiny for centuries. There wasn't a great deal of information on what exactly they could do with their powers, but the name the Poisoner seemed rather self-explanatory.
Do you think this could mean that the Fates are waking?
We didn't think they'd wake up this quickly,
Julian tugged at the knot of his cravat.
It could be just a prank for the Sun Festival.
Who's capable of a prank like this?
The Prince of Hearts can stop hearts,
Julian hazarded.
But their hearts are still beating.
Scarlet hadn't been the one to touch their pulses, but she imagined they were pounding. Hers was. She could feel her heart racing as the plumes of purple panic coming from the family began to curl like smoke from a growing fire.
I think we should do what it asks and confess our last lies out loud, Scarlet said. Even if we go back to town and find an open apothecary, I have a feeling they won't be able to fix this.
And Scarlet couldn't leave these people like this. Julian shook his head as he looked over the frozen family once more.
I should have gone along with the lie and said I was your cousin.
Why do you say that? Scarlet asked.
Because the last lie I told was to you.
Julian tore a hand through his hair, and when he looked back at her again, it hung over nervous and regretful eyes. An awful, sinking feeling turned inside of Scarlet. His lies had torn them apart before. Lying was the habit Julian couldn't seem to break, perhaps from being a part of Caraval for so long. But with all his honesty today, she'd started to hope that he had changed. But maybe she'd been wrong.
I'm sorry, Crimson. I lied when I said I left for 5 weeks to give you space.
I left because I was angry you wanted to meet the Count, and I thought leaving would make you want me more.
It did. It made her want him and hate him. And just then, it almost made her want to laugh.
It always hurt when Julian lied because it made her believe that his lies meant he didn't care. But everything he'd done today proved that he still cared. And she couldn't get mad at him for manipulating her when she'd done the same thing to him.
You're terrible, she said. But I'm terrible too. I don't really think the courtship game between you and Nicholas will be fun. The more I think about it, the more nervous I get. I only did it to test you and get back at you for leaving.
Julian's grin immediately returned.
Does that mean you're going to call it off?
Someone coughed at the other side of the table, choking, sputtering, wheezing, and the crashing of dropped goblets followed as the family began to move again.
Oh, thank you.
Bless you! You saved us!
Scarlet and Julian were immediately enclosed in one family-size hug as the small clan poured out their gratitude. Their bodies were shaking and warm from the sun, and the youngest girl with the braids might have hugged Julian a little longer than everyone else, forming an instant crush on him.
I thought for certain we were going to stay like that forever, said the stout woman who Scarlet assumed was the mother.
People passed by, but no one stopped, said one of the sons.
Can you tell us anything about who did this to you?
Asked Julian.
Oh, yes, everyone said at once. And then all their strained faces went blank.
Well, the person was...
I think...
Several of them tried to answer the question, but none of them managed it, as if their memories had been stolen. Scarlet debated voicing what she'd whispered to Julian about the possibility that the Fates were waking up and Poison was actually the Poisoner. But this family had been through enough.
They didn't need to be terrified by Scarlet's suspicions.
"We'd ask you to stay and dine with us," said the fatherly-looking man. "But I don't think any of us will be eating after this."
"That's all right," Scarlet said. "We're just glad we could help." She and Julian let everyone embrace them once again before they returned to the carriage. If this scene really was the work of a fate, they needed to warn—
"Wait!"
cried the youngest girl with the braids. She tore across the grass. Scarlet thought she may have come to give Julian a kiss goodbye, but she ran up to Scarlet instead.
"I want to give you a gift for stopping to help us."
The girl solemnly reached into the pocket of her apron and pulled out an ugly key covered in greenish-white rust and scratches, color of buried secrets that should not have been dug up.
"That's all right," Scarlet said. "You keep it."
"No," the girl insisted. "There's more to this key than just how it looks. It's like how my family was when you drove by. I don't know what it does, but I found it this morning on the edge of the well. One moment, nothing was there, and then it appeared. I think it's magic, and I want you to have it because I think you're magical too."
The girl handed her the gift. Scarlet might have teared up. This child was so precious.
"Thank you."
She enclosed the key in her palm. It wasn't until after Scarlet stepped into the carriage and looked at it again that she noticed the object had transformed from an aged piece of rust to a crystalline key that glittered like stardust and bewitchment. Chapter 10 Donatella. Tella's limbs were shaking, and her eyes were bleary by the time she neared the boarding house. Slipping between worlds had left her feeling like a damp sheet of paper that had been wrung out by rough hands. Tella didn't know how much time had passed while she'd been away. From all the rumpled festival streamers and the number of sweets melted in the streets, she'd wager she'd been gone for hours. Children who'd been running around with sun-shaped pinwheels earlier were now asleep in the arms of tired parents. Young ladies who'd been wearing simple gowns had changed into sleeker sheaths. And a new round of merchants had taken over the streets. Celebrations were dying and starting up again, coming back to life for the endless night of festival sunshine. Tella was beyond late to meet Scarlet. Her steps slowed as she entered the aging boarding house. She didn't want to see Scarlet's disappointment. She felt terrible that she'd let her down and failed to keep her promise. But Tella didn't regret following Legend. It was good for her to finally see him when he had no idea she was watching. She probably should have tracked him down in real life weeks ago. But she'd liked the dreams too much. He was so close to perfect in the dreams. And maybe that had been the point. In dreams, Legend was someone she wanted, someone she cared and worried about. But in real life, he was someone that no one should trust. Tella eased the door open and slowly stepped into a room heated with trapped sunshine.
"Scar?" she tried, hesitant.
"Donatella, is that you?"
The question was barely a whisper, so soft it felt closer to a thought, and yet the voice was unmistakable, familiar, even though Tella had only heard it once in the past 7 years. She ran into her mother's room and immediately crashed to a halt at the sight of her mother sitting up in the bed. The world stopped. The outside noises from the festival vanished. The shabby apartment faded.
Kisses on eyelids. Locked jewelry boxes, giddy whispers, exotic perfume bottles, stories at night, grins in daylight, enchanted laughter, lullabies, cups of violet tea, secretive smiles, drawers full of letters, unspoken goodbyes, fluttering curtains, the scent of plumerias.
100 misplaced memories resurfaced, and every single one appeared bloodless and insubstantial compared to the miraculous reality of Tella's mother. Paloma looked like a slightly older version of Scarlet, although her smile lacked Scarlet's gentleness. When Paloma's lips curved, they were just as they had been in the wanted poster Tella had seen for Paradise the Lost. It was the same enchanting and enigmatic smile that Tella remembered practicing when she was a little girl.
"Why am I not surprised that you look as if you just came out of a fight?"
Paloma's smile wavered, but her voice was the sweetest sound that Tella had ever heard.
"It was only with a rose bush." She flung herself toward the bed and pulled her mother into a hug. She didn't smell the same way Tella remembered. The sweet scent of magic cleaved to Paloma. But Tella didn't care. She pressed her head into her shoulder as she clung tightly to her mother's softness, perhaps a little too ferocious. Her mother returned the embrace, but only for a moment. Then she was sagging against the quilted headboard, breathing raggedly as her eyelids began to droop.
"I'm sorry," Tella pulled back right away. "I didn't mean to hurt you."
"You could never hurt me with a hug. I'm just..."
Her brow wrinkled beneath stray strands of dark mahogany hair, as if she were searching for a runaway thought.
"I think I just need to eat, my little love. Can you fetch me some food?"
"I'll ring for one of the maids."
I think..." Paloma's eyes fluttered all the way shut.
"Mother!"
"I'm fine." Her eyes cracked open again. "I just feel so weak and hungry."
"I'll be right back with something to eat," Tella promised. She hated to leave her mother, but she didn't want to make her wait for a maid to plod up and down the stairs. It was fortunate she didn't wait, because as Tella raced to the kitchen, there didn't appear to be any maids at all. They must have all taken off for the Sun Festival.
The cooking galley was abandoned. No one stopped Tella as she grabbed a tray and began piling food on top of it. She pilfered the best-looking fruits from a mound of plump peaches and sunbright apricots. Then she took a hunk of hard cheese and half a loaf of sage bread. She munched on the food as she grabbed it, her appetite returning with excitement. Her mother was finally awake, and she was going to be fine as soon as she ate. Tella thought about brewing some tea, but she didn't want to wait for the water to boil. She searched for a bottle of wine instead. They never served alcohol here, but she was certain they had some. Tella located a bottle of burgundy in a cupboard, and then she grabbed a couple of chocolate hand pies for dessert. She was proud of her feast as she carefully marched it up the steps. She remembered closing the door behind her, but it seemed she left it cracked. Tella pushed it the rest of the way open with her elbow, losing a runaway peach in the process. It hit the ground with a dull thud as Tella stepped inside. The room was colder than it had been when she left, and quiet, too quiet. The only sound came from a fly buzzing toward the stolen feast in her hands.
"I'm back."
Tella tried not to be nervous at the lack of her mother's response. Being anxious was her sister's role, but Tella couldn't stop her sense of growing unease. An apricot fell onto the floor as Tella quickened her pace. And then, the entire tray threatened to fall from her trembling hands.
The bed was vacant. The room was empty.
"Paloma?" Tella called. She couldn't bring herself to say the word mother. It hurt too much to cry out the way she had as a child and to hear no response. She'd vowed never to do it again, but it ached just as much to call her mother's formal name with no reply. Her throat tighter than before, Tella tried yelling both her mother's names.
"Paloma! Paradise!"
Absolutely nothing. Tella thrust the tray onto the bed and ran into the other bedroom, and then into the bathing room. Both were empty. Her mother was gone. Tella's legs forgot how to work. They stumbled clumsily back into the bedroom before her knees completely quit, forcing her arms to find a nearby bedpost for support.
All Tella could hear was the fly buzzing around her abandoned food, as she tried to make sense of what could have happened. Her mother was weak, confused. Maybe she'd gone to look for Tella and gotten lost? Tella just needed to find her and... Her thoughts cut off at the sight of something atop the dresser by the bed. A note. Tella clumsily pushed away from the bed. Her fingers trembled as she picked the message up. The handwriting was rushed, shaking. "My loves, I'm so sorry to leave you, but I knew that if I waited any longer, it would be too hard for me to go. Please forgive me, and do not look for me again. All I ever wanted was to protect you, but my presence will only put the two of you in more danger. If